ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 Today we are reading from Canto 5, Chapter 3. Chapter 3 is entitled as Rishabhdev's Appearance in the Womb of Meru Devi, the wife of King Nadi. Today we are on text 1. Shri Sukha Uvacha. Shri Sukha Uvacha.
Shri Sukha Uvacha.
Nabira Patya Kamo.
भगवन्तं यज्ञपुरुषं अवाहितात्मा यजत
नावीरपत्यकामो
प्रजयामेरुदेव्या
भगवन्तं यज्ञपुरुषं अवहितात्मा यजत। श्रीसुकवाच
नावीरपत्यकामो
प्रजयामेरुदेव्या भगवन्तं यज्ञपुरुषं अवहितात्मा यजत। श्रीसुकवाच
नावीरपत्यकामो
अप्रजयामेरुदेव्या भगवन्तं यज्ञपुरुषं अवहितात्मा यजत। श्री सुख उवाच
Sukhadeva Goswami said, Nabhi, the son of Maharaj Agnitra, Apatyakama, desiring to have sons, Aprajaya, who had not given birth to any children, Merudevya, with Merudevi, Bhagavantam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yajnapurusham, Lord Vishnu, the master and enjoyer of all performances of sacrifice. Avahita Atma, with great attention. Ayajata, offer prayers and worship. Translation. Shri Sukadeva Goswami continued to speak. Maharaj Nabhi, the son of Agnitra, wished to have sons, and therefore he attentively began to offer prayers and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the master and enjoyer of all sacrifices. Maharaj Nabhi's wife, Meru Devi, who had not given birth to any children at that time, also worshipped Lord Vishnu along with her husband. There is no purport to this verse, so we'll go to text 2. I'll just read the English of text 2, translation and purport. Text 2, the translation is, in the performance of a sacrifice, there are 7 transcendental means to obtain the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By sacrificing valuable things or eatables, by acting in terms of place, by acting in terms of time, by offering hymns, by going through the priest, by offering gifts to the priest, and by observing the regulating principles. However, one cannot always obtain the Supreme Lord through this paraphernalia. Nonetheless, the Lord is affectionate to his devotee. Therefore, when Maharaj Nabhi, who was a devotee, worshipped and offered prayers to the Lord with great faith and devotion, and with a pure and uncontaminated mind, superficially performing some yajna in line of Pravartya, the kind Supreme Personality of Godhead, due to his affection for his devotees, appeared before King Nadi in his unconquerable and captivating form with four hands. In this way, to fulfill the desire of his devotee, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifested himself in his beautiful body before his devotee. This body pleases the mind and the eyes of the devotees. Purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated, Bhaktya maavi janati yavan yashtashmi tattvataha tato maan tattvato jnatva vishate tad anantaram. One can understand the Supreme Personality as He is only by devotional service. And when there is a full consciousness of the Supreme Lord, by such devotion, He can enter into the kingdom of God. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 55. One can understand and see the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the process of devotional service and not in any other way. Although Maharaj Nadi performed prescribed duties and sacrifices, it should still be considered that the Lord appeared before him, not due to his sacrifices, but because of his devotional service. It was for this reason that the Lord agreed to appear before him in his beautiful bodily features. As stated in Brahma Samhita 5.30, the Supreme Lord in his original nature is very beautiful. Venu panantam aravinda dalaya taksham barakavatam samasitam budasundaramvam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, although blackish, is very, very beautiful. Om Ajnana Tirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishram Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalipatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we have started a new chapter today, chapter 3, which is about Rishabhdev's appearance in the womb of Mayuradevi through King Nadi. We just finished the chapter on the pastimes of King Agnitra in chapter 2, which Anil Prabhu went through yesterday very nicely. Some of the main themes which we learned from Agnitra's pastimes was, the main lesson was about sense control. So we see in that particular chapter how Maharaj Agnitra was quite attracted to the beautiful form of Purvachitti. Like we see over here, Maharaj Nadi also performing sacrifice to get a son. In the same way, Maharaj Agnitra also wanted to get a child, and therefore he had gone to the on the top of the Mandara mountains with a view of satisfying Lord Brahma so that he would send someone whom he could marry. So when Purvachitti appears there by Lord Brahma's arrangement, we can see verses and verses of Maharaj Agnitra where he is glorifying the beauty of Purvachitti, and especially he is attracted to her body. And therefore we see that the verses are quite, they bring out the lusty desires which Maharaj Agnitra was developing for Purvachitti. So the main thing that Prabhupada was talking about from that particular chapter was how to have self-control and how to not give into lusty desires. Because as soon as, you know, he started contemplating on the beautiful body of Purvachitti, and then obviously he started acting on it, he started flattering her with beautiful words to win her favor so that she would agree to marry him and become his wife. So as soon as he was contemplating on her, he started acting on those desires which arose in his mind. So that was the main lesson he learned from that chapter. And not only having lusty desires when he was looking at the beautiful body of Purvachitti, they did enjoy for many years, Grahastashram for many years. They had 9 sons, it is described, of which we have started now reading about the eldest son, who was Maharaj Nadi. But not only that, but Purvachitti was a heavenly dancer. So as when the sons were born, she felt she had done her duty, so she returned back to Brahma's assembly to serve Lord Brahma over there. And then Maharaj Agnidra is described, he was so much in separation of Purvachiti that he was continuously contemplating on her. His lust was still not satisfied, which is described in the previous chapter. And when he died, he attained the same planet as Purvachiti. So that is another theme which came out in the last chapter, that whatever you contemplate on your whole life or at the time of your death, that is the destination you will achieve. And that's what we see happen with Maharaj Agnidra. Because he had not yet satisfied his lusty desires, because he had not become detached yet, he had to go to the planet of Purvachiti after his death. Now we see in this particular chapter, the pastimes of the sons of Maharaj Agnidra have started. And we have started with King Nabi, who is married to Meru Devi. So we see over here that Maharaj Nabi and Meru Devi, they also desire sons. Now this is not very uncommon, because the creation is still happening. There is still progenitors required who will populate the whole material universe. So material world has just started, and you know, these people like Agnidra, Priya, that is why Priyavrata also was requested by Lord Brahma and his grandfather to enter into the Grahastha Ashram, because they required someone, you know, saintly kings to rule and also to progenate the whole universe. And that is what we are seeing over here Maharaj Nabi also do. He is also desiring a son so that, because that was his duty to populate the whole universe. So it is not uncommon to see that people perform tapasya like this to get sons. And especially in the olden days, it is actually good to see that people used to perform tapasya like this. Nowadays, you know, like Bhagavad Gita describes, Varna Shankara, children are just born out of lust. Sometimes not even marriage, especially in Western countries, people are not even married, but children are born, and sometimes if later on the couple decide, okay, we should get married and tie the knot, the children are also present in the ceremony, a little bit grown-up children. So we see all these concoctions which are happening in Kali Yuga. But in the olden days, when somebody had a desire to have children, they would actually sit and perform some sort of tapasya or some sort of sacrifices. So it was not very uncommon during those days. And it is said, it is also described that it was not uncommon for people to have hundreds of children. It wasn't uncommon. We know Dhritarashtra, for example, he had 100 sons. We know, for example, Maharaj Chitraketu, he had more than 1 million wives just because he wanted a son. So it was not uncommon for people in the past, especially kings who were progenitors, to have multiple children so that they would then populate the universe further and further through their dynasties. So like Prabhupada says, or as the Bhagavatam 12th canto describes, that all the symptoms of Kali Yuga, that, you know, smriti, balam, everything will keep going, going down, memory will go down, strength will go down. In the same way, reproductive ability of human beings is also going down. So in the olden days, people had this capacity to have so many children, but nowadays there is no capacity. Hardly, you know, one child people will have and the wife is already tired, no, I don't want any more children. Or sometimes husband and wife both are high-flying careers. So they make an arrangement that the wife especially says, I'm not going to bear children. So we see, you know, nowadays reproductive ability is going down, but the desire to have children is also going down. Because to look after children is a work of great responsibility, to raise them properly. So all these things are being lost. But here we are talking about Vedic culture, where Maharaj Nabi, along with his wife Meru Devi, is sitting down and doing tapasya or sacrifices to actually get, you know, a son like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that desire is so nice, like he's praying to the Lord, he's doing the sacrifice, and the goal of the sacrifice is so that the Lord will appear in the wife, in his wife's womb. So again, that part is also not uncommon. We see that Krishni and Sutapa, when they wanted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their son, they also sat and did tapasya for thousands of years, and then Lord Krishna agreed to appear. They took birth in, during Lord Krishna's time, and Krishna agreed to appear as their son. We also see this with Aditi, you know, who's the mother of all the demigods. She also wanted, because her all her children's kingdom had been taken away by the demons, had overpowered all the children. They had driven them out of their own homes, and as a mother, naturally she was aggrieved. So she wanted some solution to this. She wanted to help her children. And she approaches her husband Kashyapa Muni, who then tells her to do Payogata sacrifice to obtain the Supreme Personality of Godhead as our son. So again, Aditi, with the view of obtaining the Supreme Lord as our son, did that whole Vayogata sacrifice. We also see similarly Kardamamuni and Devamuti. They both also, you know, led their Brahmasashram in such an exemplary way that the Lord himself appeared, a plenary portion of the Lord as Kapila Dev in the womb of Devahuti. So we see that different people, like, you know, these people are exhibiting Vatsalya Bhav because they want the, obviously they want to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead in parental affection, and that is why they are doing this tapasya to get the Lord as their son. And they do different types of austerities, like we see Kardamamuni, Devamuni, especially Kardamamuni, he did austerities for thousands of years on the banks of the Bindu Sarovar, I believe. Where, and then the Lord appeared and blessed that, you know, to next day Manu will come with her daughter and we marry her. So that is how people did austerities in the earlier days. Sometimes Ashtanga Yoga, sometimes other types of sacrifices. Aditi, for example, performed the whole Vayogata sacrifice. And that whole description was is there in the third canto. What are the, you know, what all she did every day to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prishni and Sutapa, they did again austerities and penances, severe austerities and penances in terms of Ashtanga Yoga to get the Supreme Lord. And here we are seeing that Maharaj Nabi is performing sacrifices. So performing Vedic sacrifices was quite a common thing in the olden days. Like we know the famous verse, you know, Krithayad. The verse which talks about that in Satya Yuga, the Lord could be achieved through meditation. And in Treta Yuga, the recommended process was sacrifices or yajnas. So this is still Satya Yuga going on and they are still doing sacrifices. But that was one of the means of achieving the Lord, of performing huge sacrifices. So in the olden days, there was so much time available because the lifespans were so long. There were so much ingredients available, such that these huge sacrifices could be performed. There was so much land available, like, you know, you need vacant land to organize a huge sacrifice. So much land was available to do that. And there used to be a lot of pomp and show to arrange all these sacrifices in the olden days. And that is what we see over here. This whole sacrifice has been arranged just for Narad Nadi and Meru Devi to get a son. And we would see in the olden days, all these elaborate arrangements would be there. In fact, the kings would use all the paraphernalia that would be used would be all gold. And it is described that at the end of the sacrifice, they would just give all that in charity. Like many Shudras would come and pick up all that gold up. Sometimes they would just leave it lying somewhere. Just as nowadays we leave plastic waste lying here and there. You know, after we have, if we have, like, you know, any such sacrifice or we have a home program or something, we will be organizing plastic plates and that will be lying in one corner to put in the recycling bin. But in the olden days, they had such elaborate arrangements that gold paraphernalia would be lying. And, you know, sometimes Shudras would put, sometimes they would not even pick up all those things and they would just be lying. There was so much opulence with which these sacrifices were arranged. So not only all the arrangements, like all the land, paraphernalia, all that, but there were hundreds and thousands of priests who would sit and chant the mantras. And we see little bit, you know, there is little bit of traces left of this. Like, for example, when my mother-in-law left her body a few months ago, we had some priests who had come, you know, Ayur family priests who had come because we wanted, she was born in that lineage and we did not want to break that lineage. So some of these Ayur families had come and they were chanting different types of mantras in different meters. It was actually quite nice to hear. And, you know, when Samaveda priest had also come. And we know Samaveda is all about beautiful poetry and beautiful lyrics. So he was also chanting those beautiful lyrics. And every day for 13 days, these priests would come and chant mantras and would be sacrifices. So it was quite nice to hear. But that is just traces left. In the olden days, there would be hundreds and thousands of priests sitting and chanting all these mantras. And all of them were trained to actually chant these mantras in the perfect meter that mantra had to be chanted in. And there would be one referee priest who would be going around checking whether all these, you know, people are chanting the mantras properly, the pronunciation is correct, the meter is correct, he would be checking that. And even if you would see one, like, meter or one pronunciation out of place, the referee priest would actually stop the whole sacrifice over there. Because that there was so much importance given to the pronunciation and correct chanting of the mantras. So he would stop that and then he would get them started again. That correction would be done and then they would start again chanting all the mantras. So you know, we see like this can be compared to if we see big musical productions. Sometimes we see those huge bands are organized and there are hundreds of instruments being played. And there will be a conductor who will be like directing, and there will be a whole set of violin players, guitar players, other like trumpets, so many, you know, sets of people who will be there, who will be playing different musical instruments. And there will be one person who would be in charge of keeping an eye and like keeping a note on the sound, whether every section of that band is playing the instruments correctly to the notes that have been given to them. And as you know, they would have those headphones and they would be hearing. And if they see even one thing out of place, they would be able to recognize it has come from this particular, let's say, violin player or this particular trumpet player. And then they would check their notes and correct them, again training would be given. So in the same way, we see that when these sacrifices were done, the pronunciation of mantras was extremely important. And whether these mantras are being chanted perfectly was due to too much stress during those times. So we see, and what was the proof that these mantras are being chanted properly? The proof was that, and why even the referee priest was so strict about all these things, because if the mantras are not chanted properly, then the goal of the sacrifice wouldn't be achieved. So the proof that the mantras have been chanted properly and everything has been done properly in these sacrifices was when the goal of the sacrifice was achieved. So, you know, in the olden days, sometimes animals were sacrificed in some of these yagyas that were done. So, one of the goals would be they would sacrifice the animal, but the animal was not sacrificed with a view to that they will eat the meat later. Obviously, that was never the improper sacrifices that were done, that was never the goal. The goal was that the animal will be sacrificed and they would take like an incapacitated old animal so that they could rejuvenate that animal and give it a new body. So then the goal of that sacrifice, if it is achieved, would be that the animal would come out of the sacrifice with a new rejuvenated young body. That means everything was perfectly done in that particular sacrifice. The mantras were chanted properly, the priests were clean, everything, all the paraphernalia was properly arranged, the time, place, everything was correct. So that would be the proof that the goal of the sacrifice was achieved. And sometimes if there was some fault and the goal would not be achieved, like, you know, we see in the Bhagavatam, when Siddha Goswami and all the sages of Nandisharanya were sitting down to do the sacrifice. They had actually sat down to do a sacrifice for the welfare. Because Kali Yuga was just starting, they wanted the welfare of all the residents of Kali Yuga. They knew the dark effects of Kali Yuga that would come slowly, that would unfold slowly in the world. But when they started doing the sacrifice, because in Kali Yuga, the ingredients are not pure and all that, there was just smoke coming out of their sacrifice, it is described in the Bhagavatam. So we see, therefore, sometimes, you know, when these sacrifices are done, the time and place also needs to be correct. In the olden days, sacrifice was the recommended method, and therefore it was taken as one of the ways to achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if there are any faults, then those will be also shared by whoever is there in the sacrifice. Whoever has participated in the sacrifice, everybody will have to bear the consequences if the sacrifice goal is not achieved. That means there was some fault or some mistake that was there. But in the present day, we see that in Kali Yuga there are so many faults. Like we said, even, you know, thousands of years ago when Siddha Goswami sat down to do that, the sages of Nandisharanya sat down, there was smoke coming out. Nowadays in Kali Yuga, still it is, things have deteriorated. The ingredients are not pure. We keep getting WhatsApp messages. We sometimes think one brand of ghee is pure and we get a WhatsApp message saying, oh no, there is some contamination in that brand. And then somebody else will start thinking, okay, another brand of ghee they will buy. Again, there will be somewhere from some message will come, that brand is also not pure. So like ingredients are completely gone nowadays. Or even if we make our own ghee at home, that butter which has been obtained, for example, how, you know, the cow has been treated, how pure the milk is, everything is questionable in Kali Yuga. So in Kali Yuga, the only recourse which people have is to take, like, obviously we still do sacrifices. For example, when we have initiation ceremonies, we still do sacrifices. But that does not mean that that is the only way. We always have chanting. Therefore, when we do even our initiation ceremonies, you know, especially Sankarshan Das Maharaj, he ensures Brahma Samhita is chanted. Or we always have four Brahmanas sitting and reciting Bhagavatam and different scriptures. There would always be soft kirtan going on in the background. And because that is the only recourse for people in Kali Yuga. Otherwise, the sacrifice will be full of faults. We will not get proper wood. Ghee will not be clean. We don't know if the time and place is correct. So all these faults will definitely be there. But as soon as the Harinam is done of the Lord, every fault is negated. And that is the potency which has been given to the holy name in Kali Yuga. So we see this particular aspect of how the Lord's holy name negates all the faults that might have been there, being brought out very nicely by Shukracharya. In the 8th canto, when you know Bali Maharaj's pastime is described, and we know the whole pastime Vamandeva appears, and then you know Bali Maharaj gives away everything despite Shukracharya's protest, he gives away everything to Vamandeva. And then, you know, Vamandeva is having a conversation with Shukracharya. And that time Shukracharya, he has come to his senses. He has realized what, like this is the Supreme Lord and actually what Vamandeva has done correct. So that time he quotes a famous verse. He says, Mantratas tantratas chidram, desha kala artha vasutaha, sarvam karoti nishchidram, anu sankirtanam tava. So in that particular verse, Shukracharya is actually glorifying Vamandeva and the holy names. He is saying that, oh my Lord, mantra tas tantra tas chitram. There might be faults in actually the mantras that are chanted. There might be so many faults in the mantras. We cannot assure that every piece will chant properly. We cannot assure every piece chanted with purity, the mantra. So mantras might have faults. Tantra means all the regulative principles, the rules and regulations which have to be followed in that particular fire sacrifice. There might be faults in that as well. There might be discrepancies in time, place, person and paraphernalia. Say, desha, kala, arha, vastutaha. So there might be discrepancies in that. You know, the land we are sitting on, who knows what would have happened on that land, whether the direction is correct, whether the time was exactly correct when the mantra was, the sacrifice was done and the mantras were chanted, or whether the paraphernalia was correct. So he said there might be discrepancies in all these things. But my Lord, sarvam karoti nishchidram. Nishchidram means faultless. Everything becomes faultless. Anu sankirtanam tava. When your holy names are chanted, oh my Lord, all faults are negated. So Shukracharya himself, who was just earlier stopping Bali Maharaj from giving everything to Vamandeva, is now glorifying the holy name of the Lord and the potency of the holy name of the Lord. He is recognizing that these sacrifices and you know whatever elaborate arrangements you might do with lot of diligence, if there can be still faults, but as soon as your holy name is chanted, all the faults are negated, everything becomes faultless. And we see Srila Prabhupada, he was an emblem of actually this particular verse. So we see when, you know, it's there in the Leelamrita that when Vrindavan Devi installation was done by Srila Prabhupada, Krishna Balaram Radha Shyam Sundar Devi installation was done, obviously there was huge fire sacrifices Prabhupada had organized. But he had only organized that fire sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Smartha Brahmins. Otherwise, there will not be acceptance of those deities or acceptance of the temple or ISKCON within the local people of Vrindavan. So therefore, Prabhupada arranged all these fire sacrifices at that time. As soon as the fire sacrifice was over, Prabhupada actually encouraged his devotees, his disciples, that now start loud kirtan. Let's do loud sankirtan. And as soon as the devotees started kirtan, Prabhupada said that the real installation of the deity has now begun. So that is what even Prabhupada said, that you know, although we did the fire sacrifice, but in Kali Yuga, especially if the holy names are not chanted, no goal will be achieved and the Lord might not even appear in the deity form to accept the worship which the devotees would do eventually. So Lord is, you know, when these sacrifices are done, and coming to the purport which is given in this particular verse, it is mentioned that the Lord did not appear or is not bound to appear just because the sacrifice has been done well. Let's say everything was faultless. There was no fault in the time, place, paraphernalia, or there was no fault even in the rules and regulations or the uccharan, the pronunciations of the mantras. There was no fault at all. Let's say everything was done perfectly, but that still does not mean the Lord is bound to appear over there. Because the Lord is Abhidya and Swarup. He is completely independent. He is not bound by the rules that, oh, they have done sacrifice correctly. It's a tick box, so I have to appear over there. The Lord is not bound like that. What the Lord gets attracted to is devotional service of people, or the people who are doing, the priests who are doing, or the Brahmin who is sitting there and doing. So if we see austerities, or if the Lord was bound like that, just to appear because someone did perfect austerities or perfect sacrifices, even Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha did austerities. Now those type of austerities, we can't even imagine someone doing in the present age. His body was fully gone, there was an anvil on his body. But the Lord is not bound to appear for such people and bless them. Brahma appeared to bless him and gave him some boons and all that. So the Lord is, everything is perfectly done, the Lord is not obliged at all. He will come to give darshan only if he is pleased, like we see in this particular instance. It is described that because the Lord is very affectionate, he is Bhakta Vatsala, he is very affectionate to his devotees, and because King Nabi was such a great devotee, just by being attracted by the devotion of King Nabi, the Lord decided to appear in that particular sacrifice. And that particular theme will come out in the following verses as well, when the priests are glorifying the Lord after he has appeared. But it is very clear that the Lord has not appeared just being satisfied by the sacrifice. He just appeared because he wanted to give darshan to Nabi, owing to the devotion that was there in Nabi's heart. And the fact that Nabi wanted the Lord as his son, to appear as his son. So he wanted to render service in Vatsalya Bhav. Now we see the example of Yajni Brahmins. So sometimes when these sacrifices are done, here at least the priests were aware, they were, doing them under the guidance of, like, because they knew Nabi and maybe they wanted a son like the Lord. Therefore they were doing it with the right purpose in mind. And they knew that it is ultimately the Lord who has to be satisfied through these sacrifices. But we see the Yajnik Brahmins during Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto. The whole description has been given over there. That they did not remember that the goal of sacrifice is Krishna. Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam. Lord Krishna says himself in the Bhagavad Gita that I am Bhoktaram of all the sacrifices. I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices that happen. But the Yajnik Brahmanas are so, like, they have become so narrow track in their performance of the sacrifices that the goal was completely lost from their mind. They had completely forgotten the goal and they kept doing the sacrifices just thinking that, oh, the purpose of the sacrifice is that it's executed perfectly. So therefore when the Supreme Lord's messengers came to ask for some food, they completely ignored those children. It is described in the 10th canto that they were so engrossed in their mantras and all that, that they did not even acknowledge that these boys have come to ask for food for Krishna and Balaram. They ignored them completely and the boys were so insulted that they went away from there and reported it back to Krishna Balaram. And Krishna Balaram then actually requested the boys that this time don't go to the Brahmins but go to their wives. And the Brahmins' wives, the Brahmanis, had heard a lot about the glories of Krishna and Balaram through all the gopis who used to come to sell their products like milk, tea and all that. Through their mouth they had heard the glories. So the Yajni Brahmin wives were very much aware that these are the Supreme Lords and whatever is there in this world is for their satisfaction. So as soon as those boys, the cowherd boys, approached the Brahmin's wives, they immediately gathered all the paraphernalia, all the food. So the sacrifice was not even over yet, the food had not even been offered. It was still bhoga. But the Brahmin's wives realized that this is meant for the satisfaction of Yajna Purusha, who is none other than Lord Krishna, who is standing in the forest and he is asking, I'm hungry, give me food. So they knew the goal of all these sacrifices. They collected everything and they rushed to Krishna and Balaram and with great devotion they fed them all the food that was there. So they had achieved the perfection of the sacrifice, whereas the Brahmins had forgotten what is the purpose and therefore they did not achieve the goal of the sacrifice, which was satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. So the Lord actually sees, if we see, study this particular verse which we read today, the Lord sees one's sacrifice in devotional service. That is what the Lord is attracted to. The Lord is not attracted to the austerity. The Lord is not attracted to the perfection of the yajna. The Lord is just attracted to whether there is devotion in the heart of the person and how much sacrifices he is ready to do in his devotional service. That is what the Lord is attracted to, not how many sacrifices one has done. So for example, we know the pastime of Prithu Maharaj. So Prithu Maharaj was such a great king. He was born, from the body of King Vena, the churning of the body of King Vena. And he was such a great king, he actually subdued the whole Mother Earth and he milked her, made her into a cow and milked her. So that whole pastime description is there. And then for the betterment of his citizens, Prithu Maharaj wanted to do 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas. And he actually started doing those Yajnas, but as soon as he had reached the 99th Yajna, Indra, as we know, Bhagavatam, we see so many examples of Indra becoming a bit insecure. So Indra became immediately insecure because Indra was holding the title of the only person in the universe who had done 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas. And he thought, oh, somebody from the Bhuloka is going to finish Ashwamedha, 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas. So he immediately became very insecure. And he actually came in the garb of a sannyasi and he stole the horse and went away. The horse which was meant for the sacrifice. And obviously it was an Ashwamedha Yajna. So without the horse, the sacrifice wouldn't be complete. And then the whole description is there that how Lord Indra became responsible for starting upper sampradayas. Because he dressed in the false garb of a sannyasi. He's not a sannyasi, but he dressed like that just to mislead Prithu Maharaj's son who was following him to capture the horse back. So, you know, Prabhupada describes how he was responsible for starting all the upper sampradayas and because of which Lord Brahma was not very happy with him. But, you know, the second time Prithu Maharaj's son brought it, the second time again Indra took the horse back. And this time then Lord Brahma appeared over there just to pacify the whole situation and he actually requested Prithu Maharaj. He said, look, whatever it is, Indra is a devotee of the Lord. Right now he is feeling a bit insecure because he has done 100 sacrifices. So Prithu Maharaj, you please give up the desire to do the 100 sacrifice. Let your glory be that you have done 99 Ashwamedha Yajnas. And that is what the Lord will also be pleased with. And this is where we see that, you know, the Lord is looking at what sacrifice one has done in devotional service. Whether one is happy to sacrifice his own desires or his own free will for the pleasure of the Lord. And that is what the Lord is looking, not the number of sacrifices. So in terms of Prithu Maharaj, the Lord did not say only if that number 100 is achieved, then it is a success. No, Prithu Maharaj listened to the higher authorities in, you know, view of keeping peace in the world, not to disturb Indra's mind too much. He actually sacrificed his own free will and his own desire to do that 100 Ashwamedha Yajna. And he stopped at that 99th Yajna. And what result did he get? The result he got, that was the Lord personally appeared in Prithu Maharaj's sacrifice. And he actually blessed him over there. So we see that the Lord is attracted to these sacrifices which his devotees do in, you know, trying to keep the Lord as the supreme goal in their mind. And not just some prestige of doing high Vedic sacrifices or doing big Ashwamedha Yajnas. And that is what the Lord recognized in Prithu Maharaj. So he achieved the goal without even doing the 100 sacrifice. The Lord appeared being pleased by his devotion. And we see even in the case of Bali Maharaj, same, like we were talking about Shukracharya Vamandev, the Mantra Sastrasrita's verse. But even Bali Maharaj also, he had done such great austerities just to please his guru, so that he can conquer all the heavenly kingdoms and he can defeat the demigods. Because Bali Maharaj was in the lineage of demons. And he goes to great lengths, he did great endeavors to actually defeat all the demigods. And he was successful. He drove them out of the heavenly kingdoms and he captured. He made that his kingdom and he was ruling the heavenly kingdoms. So much opulence, so much great endeavor he had done to achieve this particular opulence. But when he was sitting and doing that sacrifice and Vamandev came to ask everything from Bali Maharaj, he did not hold on, oh, maine to itna mehnat kiya tha. He did not say, I have worked so hard, how can I give everything away to you? He recognized that this is the Supreme Lord and he was happy to give him those three steps of land. Even though Shukracharya warned him that this is Vishnu, through the three steps of land he is going to take everything away from you. But still Bali Maharaj did not stop. Because for him that sacrifice was not important or his own opulence was not important. For him the sacrifice was doing in devotional service for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. That is what was important and that attracted Vamandev's heart. So even though Bali Maharaj did not listen to his guru, he had done a guru apraad. But in this particular case, Bhagavatam explains you are allowed to do that because he was doing it for the service of the Lord. And Shukracharya actually curses him. He says, you will go to hell because you did not listen to me and you gave three steps of land to this Vamandev. And Bali Maharaj had to go to hell. But he went to hell under the protection of the Supreme Lord. Vamandev personally promised him, I'll be the doorkeeper. and I will commit you to hell. And over there he went to actually Vrinda Sarga. He went to the, you know, hellish, the heavenly planets which are there in the under the Bhuloka. So he had much more opulence over there than what was there even in the heavenly kingdoms. So but we see that Vamandev was attracted to Bali Maharaj's sacrifice of devotion that he was doing. And Bali Maharaj then became the emblem of Atmanivedanam, just because of that particular quality he displayed. He's even today glorified as, you know, the symbol of Atmanivedanam, sacrificing everything for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And just earlier in this canto, in the fifth canto, in the first chapter, we read the pastime of Priyavrata, Maharaj Priyavrata. So he was not performing any sacrifices, but talking about this theme of how the Lord is attracted to the sacrifice of one's desires in devotional service or to achieve the higher goals of life. So Priyavrata Maharaj was sitting, he was under the direct tutelage of Narada Muni. Narada Muni was his direct spiritual master. And Narada Muni had preached to him about detachment, about not getting entangled in the material life, and how to stay a brahmachari. And that is what Priyavrata had already decided. He was sitting and doing austerities. He did not want to go back to the kingdom of his father's kingdom or rule the kingdom or anything like that. But at that time, Maharaj Uttanapad had already retired and there was nobody to look after the affairs of the material universe. So Brahma himself came down and he requested Priyavrata that, please, you know, you take up this Grahastha Ashram and come back to rule the kingdom because the world needs saintly kings like you. So we see once again, you know, Maharaj Priyavrata's character described in the first chapter. He sacrificed his own desire or his own free will to become a brahmachari, stay detached and pursue the path of self-realization in that particular way. And he agreed to Lord Brahma's proposal that, yes, I will become a king. And if you become a king, you have to be a grahastha, obviously, because then you have to have lineage. But he did everything in the spirit of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which was so pleasing to the Lord's heart. So whenever a devotee like Maharaj Nabhidi here, who was very much attracted to the Lord in devotional service, wanted to serve the Lord in parental bhava or vatsalya bhava, and the Lord got attracted by that. In the same way, whenever people had put aside their own desires or their own free will or their own false ego and have actually aligned themselves with the purpose of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have all been able to attract the mercy of the Lord. Like Priyavrata, like Bali Maharaj, like the Yajnik Brahmin's wives. We see all these examples in the scriptures. And you know, there is a famous conversation between Rahugana and Jadabhat, which brings out this particular aspect that how the Lord is cannot be obtained through different types of austerities and penances. So why Jadabhat was helping to carry the palanquin of Rahugana? And then, you know, the pastime is there how Jadabhat was trying to avoid even, you know, stepping on the ants, and the palanquin was shaking a little bit. But then, you know, when Jadabhat starts speaking to Rahugana, that time Rahugana king realizes that this is actually a self-realized soul. And he sits down and takes so many instructions from Jadabhat. So as part of that, Jadabhat says, you know, the famous verse, he says, Rahugana eta tapasa na yati na chejyaya nirvapana dhruhadva na chana chandasa naiva chalabhi surye vina matpada rajodi shekam. So he is explaining to Rahugana. He is saying that one cannot realize the absolute truth by celibacy. So you know, like we see Priyavrata, he wanted to be a celibate. He did not want to get entangled in any material affairs or sense gratification or anything like that. But on Brahma's instructions, he took up Grahastha Ashram, but he still realized the Supreme Lord. So Jadabhat is stressing that over here. He is saying one cannot realize the absolute truth by celibacy. One cannot realize the absolute truth even by following strict rules and regulations of Grahastha Ashram. So neither by Brahmacharya, following strict Brahmacharya, nor following strict Grahastha Ashram very carefully, nor by being a very, very devoted Vanaprastha, nor by sannyas. So not by any of these ashrams one can realize the absolute truth, nor can one realize the absolute truth by severe penances. And he is describing the penances. That in the freezing winter, somebody stands in the, you know, river which is almost frozen for the whole night, or you know, for many, many months or whatever, he's able to stand in the river in freezing winter in that water. Or in, you know, hot summer, he's happy to sit in the middle of a desert and put fires around him with the sun shining on top of him. Even if he does that level of penances, one cannot realize the absolute truth. The absolute truth can be realized only through devotion and by serving the lotus feet of the devotees of the Lord and taking their dust and smearing your body with the dust of the devotees. So once again, Jadabharata is stressing over here that the Lord will not be pleased just by looking at your penances and all that. And we know there is a pastime in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to do kirtan in Srivas Thakur's house, and one day he was not able to feel that ecstasy which he would every day feel. And he was wondering why this is happening. But in the morning what had happened, or in the earlier night what had happened was, there was a very staunch brahmachari who had approached Srivas Thakur. And that brahmachari's staunchness, he was so staunch that every day he would only drink little cow's milk. That's it. He used to subsist himself only on cow's milk and absolutely nothing else. So Shiva Sapu was very taken by, oh, this is such a nice brahmachari. He doesn't eat anything else. So much sense control. Shiva Sapu was a very simple devotee. So he got taken in by all these things. And the brahmachari requested, I also want to please witness Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sankirtan Leela. Please let me, you know, hide in the corner and see him doing Sankirtan and dancing in Kirtan. And Shiva Sathya, you know, in that verse, he allowed the brahmachari to be there in the house. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started his kirtans, he was not able to feel the ecstasy. And he actually called Shiva Sathya and all the devotees and he questioned that today I am not able to feel the ecstasy. There is something definitely there which is amiss or which is different from what we do every night. So is there someone present over here who should not be here? And because of that it must be happening. So Srivas Thakur then very meekly told the Lord. He said, yes, this brahmachari had approached me. He had such a strong desire to see your kirtan, my Lord. And he is such a nice brahmachari. He only drinks milk every day, cow's milk. And therefore I allowed him to stay. So very, you know, the brahmachari also became afraid by that time. So very meekly he comes out. And at that time Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells Srivas Thakur. He says that, do you think that, you know, I will get attracted just because of some penances he is doing of drinking milk? So again, you know, over there in that past time, the Lord was giving this particular lesson which Jadabharata is giving to Raghuna, that the Lord is not bound to be attracted just because he did some penances and austerity. He is attracted only by the simple devotion that is there in the heart of people. So, also sacrifice them to the right person. So we talked about how Lord is attracted to devotion in the heart of a person and not just by the number of sacrifices or the perfectness of the sacrifices. But sacrifice also has to be done to the right person. That is also very important. Bhuktanam yajna tapasam. Like we said, the Lord is the supreme enjoyer of all the sacrifices. But if a sacrifice is being done and that is not being done for the pleasure of the Lord or to achieve some goal where the Lord is involved, then that sacrifice is also a waste. And same Jadabharata's pastime, we see that. So when, you know, Jadabharata, his brothers had rejected him, they had made him stand like a scarecrow in the middle of the field, that at least some use he will be there. Because Jadabharata was actually Jad. Jad means he was very dull externally. You know, somebody no bits at all, very dull bitted like that. And then some people capture him and take him away, some Kali worshippers, thinking that, oh, he looks, you know, hatta katta naujavan, like he looks very well, he looks very good, so he will be a good human sacrifice, he can do to Kali Mata. And they were about to sacrifice Jadabharata to Kali Mata. But Kali Mata appears over there immediately, because she sees that a devotee, such a pure devotee, is going to be killed for her pleasure. She appears and she actually kills all the miscreants and allows Jadabharata to go. So therefore, you know, that is also extremely important to keep in mind, that the sacrifice is being done for what purpose and to whom. And there is a pastime again in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about a devotee called Chandidas. So this Chandidas was actually, his name was Chandidas because he was the worshipper of Mother Kali's Rodra Ru means like a ghastly form of Mother Kali, whose name was Chandi, Ma Chandi. So he was a very great devotee of Chandi. And he had a brother who was a Vaishnava. And they used to live close to each other. And Chandidas was extremely rich, whereas his Vaishnava brother was very poor, like completely poverty stricken. So again in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is described that worshippers of, you know, Mother Durga, or a form of Mother Durga, because she is the in charge of this whole material universe, she gives so much opulence to all these people because they are desirous to become materially opulent. But on the other hand, you compare them to the worshippers of Lord Krishna or Vishnu, they will usually be in abject poverty. They will be poverty stricken, nothing will be there, they will be hardly able to meet, you know, to make their two ends meet. So that is what we see here. Chandidas, great Chandi worshipper, so much opulence, and the brother, very Vaishnava, but complete poverty. So while Chandidas had a beautiful deity of Ma Chandi, whom he used to worship every day, his Vaishnava brother had a beautiful Shaligram. Now Chandidas had a nice garden which he had cultivated, like he had gardeners and all the beautiful flowers which used to grow in that garden. Whereas because this Vaishnava brother was poor, he did not have even flowers to offer to his Shaligram. So one day he was looking over in the garden of his brother, of Chandidas, and he saw all these beautiful flowers in his garden. And in his mind he was thinking, "Oh my Shaligram Srila, I don't have anything to offer to you. But let me at least do this Manasi Puja, where I am offering," like he just meditated on one particular flower in the garden, and in his meditation he offered that flower to the Shaligram Srila. And the Shaligram Srila, you know, accepted that particular Manasik worship. We know that is also one of the authorized or bona fide way to worship the Lord, Manasi Puja. We know about the pastime of one more devotee in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, who was actually offering sweet rice, like the big, you know, nice bhoga to the Lord in his mind. And then he actually wanted to test the temperature of the sweet rice to see if it's the right temperature for the offering. And his finger actually gets burned. So which proves that everything that we do in, you know, pure devotee does in Manasi Puja, the Lord accepts it, and therefore that sweet rice was physically almost there because the finger got burned. So Chandidas' brother, the Vaishnava brother, mentally offers one flower from the garden to his Shaligram Srila. Now coincidentally that day, when Chandidas collects flowers to do his worship to Ma Chandi, he picks up that particular flower as well. And he offers it to Ma Chandi. You know, he was a great worshipper, so with a lot of devotion he was doing his seva. And when he offered that particular flower to Chandi Ma, immediately she appeared in her original form out of the deity. And she said, "Oh Chandidas, I am so pleased with you and I am happy to bless you. You please ask me any boon that you want." And Chandidas is very perplexed. And he said, "Hey Mata, I am doing service every day to you. Same flowers I bring, same day I do aarti, whatever paraphernalia. Every day I am doing service to you. How come you decided to appear today to me?" And then Chandi Mata explained. She said that today for the first time you have offered me prasad of my master. So Chandidas didn't understand. He said, "What prasad of master I offer?" So then Chandi Mata explained to him. She said that there was one flower in your garden which had been offered by your brother mentally to his Shaligram Srila, who is none other than Lord Vishnu or Krishna, who is actually my worshipable master. And that flower had then become prasad because it was offered to Krishna. And you offered that flower to me. So that gives me the greatest satisfaction whenever I get prasad of my Lord and Master. And today you gave me that satisfaction completely, and therefore I have appeared to you today. So Chandidas then said that, "Oh Mata, if you know this was the case, why you never told me before that foolish Chandi? Why are you Chandidas? Why are you worshipping me? Go and worship Shaligram. And I would have done that, Ma." And Chandi Ma said that, "You never asked me. Your whole purpose of worshipping me was just to gain material opulences, increase your prestige, position, all that. This was never asked. It was never there in your heart as a desire." And then Chandidas said, "We said that since you have given me this knowledge that this Shaligram of Krishna is your worshipable master, should I go and worship that Shaligram? I hope you will not take offense." And Chandima actually assures him. She says that, "I'm very happy in fact if you worship Shaligram. So you have my full blessings. You go and worship the Shaligram and understand that I will be completely pleased." And from that day onwards, it is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Chandidas became a great devotee. He became a Vishnu Bhakta, he became a great devotee of the Shaligram Srila. And it is described, he has written so many songs after that. which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to relish in all the kirtans that he used to sing those songs. Whatever songs Chandilas had composed were sung, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to take great pleasure in listening to Chandilas' songs. So therefore it is important to remember that whatever sacrifice we do or whatever worship we offer, it's offered to the right person as well. Because Krishna is Bhoktaram Yajnakarasam. Everything in this world is meant for this pleasure and not for the pleasure of anything else, like Chandi Mata also indicates to Chandidas. So we'll end the class here, but the theme over here in today's verse is, as we can see, that worship the Lord to fulfill all desires, Atama Sarva Kamava Mokshakam Udaradi, Tibrena Bhakti Yogena Vijeta Purushamparam. So rather than what we see, Agnihra doing, sitting on top of Mandara mountain and hoping for a beautiful life like Purva Chitti, Nabi and Meru Devi are doing the right thing. They are worshipping the Supreme Lord through sacrifices just to get in as their son. So, for any desire that you have, approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because that way you will attract His mercy, as you can see in Maharaj Nabi says. The other thing we see over here is that the Lord is more attracted to the devotion rather than the sacrifice or the perfectness of the sacrifice or the austerity that has been done for Him, as is evident from the purport which Srila Prabhupada writes, that the Lord appeared not being obliged by the sacrifices, the fulfillment of the sacrifices that was done by Maharaj Nabi, but just because of the devotion that was there in his heart to obtain the Lord as his son. So these are the two themes that we see coming out of these verses. So we'll end the class here. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Ataji mentioned, Sukracharya mentioned that this mantra, tantra, all of these are relatively inferior compared to holy name. Holy name is the most auspicious. So, however, in most of the cases, people do in general yajnas and mantra, tantra, that's more important. And holy name seems like not so important.
Very true, Prabhuji. And that is why Prabhupada was always, Prabhupada started this whole Krishna consciousness movement as a preaching movement. Like we are reading Leelamrita nowadays, reading Purushottaman, and we see over there, it is so amazing to see Srila Prabhupada. It's still early 1940s, independence is, struggling for independence is going on in India and all that. But even at that time, Srila Prabhupada was 46 years old. But there is so much fervor inside Srila Prabhupada to preach. So that was always there in Srila Prabhupada. Preach about the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Preach about the glories of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Even during that time, we used to write to so many people who were in big positions in the parliament, or even to Britishers, or even to Indians who were in powerful positions, just to preach to them about Krishna consciousness. Because Prabhupada knew if the leaders become Krishna conscious, the citizens will automatically become Krishna conscious. So right now, like you said, we see people still give importance to yajnas and all, but not to chanting. And that is because there is no one to guide all these people. And that is what Prabhupada wanted his followers to carry on. So therefore we see even in our temple we do Harinam so nicely, so that somehow or the other the holy name will go in the mind. But we also need to bring that information in all these smarta brahmanas to keep promoting these sacrifices and all. So that is what Prabhupada came to preach, and he, as his followers, he wants us to carry on.
And you also mentioned that the purpose of this yajnas, brahmanas are doing, in the past perhaps they were focusing on offering this to Vishnu, but now they are focusing on how can I get money or wealth or all the gold from that yajna.
Yes.
So what about the brahmana also do like kirtan, so with that mentality, so will that be offered to Lord or
So very, very true, Prabhuji. Nowadays, like I was saying in Kaliyuga, everything is faulty. Not only the ghee and all the ingredients are faulty, but we don't find pure brahmanas who have been trained properly and who realize that the goal of these sacrifices is the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. So it has become money-making business. Like I was describing my own mother-in-law's journey, like when she passed away, we had organized all these South Indian Ayur Brahmins to come and do the sacrifice and the chanting of whatever hymns and all that for 30 days. But we could see that the whole purpose is a hefty price, it's a hefty fee they charge. Like 1 lakh, 2 lakhs, 3 lakhs rupees, they immediately charge us for doing all that. So the whole purpose of Brahmanas has become, like Prabhupada says, filling the belly. That has become, so we see that greed has come in Brahmins because Kali Yuga is going on, obviously there are no pure Brahmins over there. But then it is up to the devotees also to spread this auspiciousness to the holy name. So I remember why we had these Raganas doing, but we also had devotees, like devotees from Chopati temple had also come from the Mumbai temple. They had come, they had organized nice kirtan. So many days we had beautiful kirtan. Every evening Bhagavatam classes we used to do, where all the neighbors used to come and we used to do Bhagavatam classes. So why we did the Vedic, you know, whatever Vedic was there in terms of the sacrifice, because that was to please the family and the last wishes. But we also kept, you know, this focus in mind that devotees should be there doing kirtan and Bhagavatam readings should be there, because she was a devotee of the Lord. So that is where, you know, the devotee's responsibility is there then to bring that particular aspect in as well. A sacrifice is just being done with the purpose of money making or getting god worship or something like that.
And also people, not only Brahmanas making money, but people are not satisfied unless they spend and do all this big activity. If it is just chanting, they will think that you are not doing anything.
Very true.
No respect for
you. They feel that satisfaction and they see something is happening and they create some money for it. Agree. Good point, Sanji. Thank you so much. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Jai.